Hey everybody, I'm Dr. Deb, and welcome to another episode of PTSD and Beyond. Welcome to the PTSD and Beyond podcast, where we give you insights into post-traumatic stress, trauma recovery, healing, and beyond. I'm Dr. Deb Lind, and in each episode, I have a conversation with a guest who will stimulate your mind, touch your heart, and connect with your spirit, and also give you a greater understanding of yourself and others on this healing and recovery journey walked by so many of us before, wounded healers with lived experience and heroes. Hopefully, we'll also provide a glimpse into possibilities and purpose, hope, and inspiration. Thanks for listening and enjoy the podcast. One last thing, guys, before we dive into today's episode, if you'd like an ad-free experience and like early access to new episodes and special events, I want to let you know you can join us at patreon.com. That is patreon.com/PTSD and Beyond. All right, let's do it. Hey, everybody, this is Dr. Deb with PTSD and Beyond, and I've got a question for folks. People that are listening right now, what are you thinking about visual imagery? Do you even know what visual imagery is? If you were to meet two leading subject matter experts in visual imagery, would you stay on for the podcast and listen to it throughout the duration? I think that most people would. And why I say that with such confidence is because we do happen to have today on PTSD and Beyond two subject matter experts, and we're honored to have these ladies with us today. And I need to let you guys know something right off the bat here. There is a book. They're both authors of this co-created book that has practical tips and nuggets in there that when you read it and you look at it, you're going to be able to say, you know what, that one, that, yep, that's me right there. That's me. And oh my gosh, this one is me too. So let's give a little bit of a bio about our two guests today. We have Phyllis Kahaney and Rachel Epstein. They're both leaders, like I said, in the field of mental imagery and visualization therapy. They're the co-authors of a new book called Reversing the Trauma of War. And after successfully overcoming symptoms of post-traumatic stress using mental imagery, Phyllis is retrained as a readjustment counselor using visualization to help heal and comfort military vets and folks in the military. Their work, I want to let you guys know, their work extends. It includes military as well as extends to first responders, folks that are in the fire service, as well as our first responders within COVID today. So you're thinking like, you know, folks that are out there with EMTs, docs, nurses, you know, anyone who's on the front lines right now and needing assistance globally with post-traumatic stress symptoms, as well as end-of-life patients. Rachel is the director of the American Institute for Mental Imagery in New York City, where she conducts classes and provides individual coaching. Guys, let's give a heartfelt PTSD and Beyond welcome to Phyllis Kahaney and Rachel Epstein. Ladies, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. We're very happy to be here.
Thank you. It's great to be on this program.
Now, in the beginning of the intro, I posed questions to our listeners, and I know there's somebody out there right now that is wondering about, well, what exactly is mental imagery and how can it help us with our past and our present?
So mental imagery is simply the mind thinking in pictures. So there are many ways that we think every day. We think logically in words, and that brings us into a cause and effect narrative in our lives. And we can also think through images and through our intuition. So we're actually thinking in images all the time. We just don't recognize it. Sometimes when, let's say it's in the morning and we go to pick out a blouse from our wardrobe, we're actually imagining ourselves in the blouse before we actually pick it. It happens very quickly. We're not always aware of our images, but they're always happening moment to moment. And we see it all the time in competitive sports. When a basketball player wants to go and make a shot, he first envisions the ball going in the trajectory from his hand or her hand into the basketball shoot. And then he shoots it, or the basketball hoop, and then he shoots it. She shoots it. So it's very common that we engage in imagery and we're not really cognizant of its powers in our lives. There's one other way that I like to think about imagery. I think about the imagery for healing purposes as the mind talking to the body. It's the way we communicate. We don't talk to our body with words. We talk with images. And when we give ourselves new images about healing, we can heal our mind and body.
You know, Rachel, those are some really good points, because one of the things that I'm finding that people are in our COVID world that are experiencing post-traumatic stress symptoms is, have you seen on social media that people are saying, I'm having a really difficult day. Can you send me pictures of your dog? Or can you send me pictures of nature? Or I'm sure that you've seen the video about the judge and the attorney, right? And the attorney shows up and, you know, he had the filter on and he's talking as a cat.
Oh, with a cat.
And how many people have found enjoyment and laughter in seeing that image, right, of this cat, or even just cat images or images of kids, little, you know, the 30-second snippets. And this quote that you just said here is that, you know, the mind sees in pictures, and folks with post-traumatic stress and trauma, we see things as images. We see things as images. So talk with us a little bit about, to give us a history, especially because, you know, our audience likes to know. We're really curious. We want to know what it is, where did it come from, and what does it do? So where did mental imagery and visualization, where did it come from?
So you want to answer?
No, you go ahead. Please.
Okay. So the form of mental imagery that we do comes from the Western spiritual tradition. So there are many forms of imagery. You find imagery in shamanistic traditions. You find imagery in hypnosis therapy. You find imagery in Tibetan Buddhism. So imagery has been around for as long as human beings have been around. And the earliest languages are pictograms because, right, they're hieroglyphs. So instead of having physical hieroglyphs outside, what we're doing is learning to read and to create the hieroglyphs of the inner mind. And this particular tradition comes, as I said, from the Western spiritual tradition and can be found in Jewish, Christian, and Islamic sources. They have long traditions in each of these traditions of using imagery to both heal and also to connect to the divine.
You know, it's interesting. So folks that are listening right now, before we started recording with the podcast, we talked about another interview that we had. And one of the things that was really profound about that interview was about connecting with the spirit and how there's an energy presence with the divine and the things that we do see, and how that connection to our spirit self then lends to the changing of imagery and the changing of images. So one of the quotes that I saw here, I think this is absolutely, absolutely brilliant, is that in imagination, anything can happen. So when we change our images, right, and we can replace some of those images, then it links back to something that we were talking about before our recording, is about that the past and the future, the past has existed, right? The future hasn't existed yet. So when we live in the present moment and we have current images, then how can we take visualization and mental imagery to help the images then that resurface? So we want to change them. How do we help ourselves do that with then connecting with our divine spirit and ourself?
I think it's very important what you say about spirit, because one of our beliefs is that to heal, we want to make the turn. Usually during our life, we kind of go along in a horizontal plane in time. We mm-hmm. do this and then we do that.
Right.
And in imagery, And for healing, we want to be able to make a turn to the vertical world, whatever that is for anybody. It can be nature, it can be God, it can be a religion, it can be a belief system. And when people are able to do that, in a way, they're in no time. So when we're in the past, we tend to be depressed. Mm-hmm. And when we're in the future, we tend to be anxious. So where we want to work is in no time, in the center.
I love this. So folks, let's repeat this, what Phyllis said. So Phyllis said that when we're depressed, we're connected back to our past. And when we're anxious, then we're connected to our future. Let's talk about some of before we even move on, let's just take a moment and pause and listen to that again. When we're depressed, our spirit self and our whole self, our spirit, mind, and body are linked to the past. And when we're anxious, our spirit, mind, and body are linked to the future. So the listener that's out there right now, what does that feel like for you? How does that connect with your vertical self? What Phyllis is talking about, something that's bigger than us, something that's divine. And we all have a spirit center. People might say it's our gut instinct, right? But we all know what those things mean and mean to us. That's beautiful, Phyllis. One thing that I'd like to touch on real quickly is the science behind everything. Because sometimes folks I'm sure you guys have met somebody, right? I can speak about stories of working with in the corporate world. You know, you get the SVP who's got their arms crossed and, you know, just cut off, doesn't want to do this, has to do it because, you know, maybe they have anger issues or for whatever reason, you know, you get called in to do things and help people. And folks really want to know about the science behind some of this stuff. So talk with us about, you know, what some of the science is behind mental imagery and visualization.
So I think that we all are well aware that even in conventional medicine, they use imagery to help people heal. It's particularly in cancer, it's well used to negate nausea and also to reduce pain, and sometimes to even stimulate the immune system. So those are sort of conventional medical uses of it. But there are several studies that I think that have been done about visualizations. It just shows you how the power of the image. So the first visualization study I want to talk about was done in 2020. And they took student athletes and they said to them, visualize your best lifting capacity, right? And then they took another control group and they didn't tell them to visualize. And it turned out that when they went to weightlift, the people who had done visualizations could lift 10 to 15 pounds more than they were previously able to do, while the people who hadn't done visualizations were only able to lift maybe 5 pounds more. So that's study number one. Now, there are other studies that show that if you visualize about weightlifting or, you know, increasing muscle strength, and you don't do any exercise, you just visualize doing the exercise, they too put on muscle mass. It may not be as great as the muscle mass as people who do weightlifting, but it is measurable increase in their muscle mass. Then this brings us to another point about why this works, because they've done other studies where they have looked at the motor neurons when you perform a visualization, and they found that when you do a visualization about your muscle contracting, your muscle contracts. Right? So your mind and your body are working coherently, and it's even working when you're just visualizing. So there was about 10 years ago, a new area of science developed and came out called a study of mirror neurons. And now there's some discussion about whether mirror neurons exist in people or they don't exist in people. They know they exist in monkeys. But what is the importance of a mirror neuron? What it was saying is that they found that when people ride a bike, if you ride a bike, of course, your muscles are working. If you watch, right, your mind is seeing it, your visual cortex, and then it comes and, you know, you're pedaling along. If you watch someone riding a bicycle, the same areas of the brain light up in your head to ride a bicycle as if you were actually riding it. So we know now that when we visualize, we are lighting up areas of activity in our bodies. We're giving, it is a message system that's going on with visualizations.
Yep.
So the last thing I want to talk about is that there was a new theory that came out about trauma. At least it was new to me. I just read the article. And it said that trauma splits sensory and emotional memory from the metacontextual autobiographical memory. So when you do a visualizations, what we're doing is bringing back all of the different pieces of ourselves. So we're not just doing it sensorily, as there are some really wonderful PTSD trainings that do that, but we're also engaging all of our senses. We're engaging our visual sense, our hearing, our feeling, our tasting. All of those senses are being turned inward. We're labeling it mental imagery, but in fact, it's a turning in of all our senses so that we can reconstruct that trauma in a new way and put it back in its place to redo it, in effect, and to reverse the trauma itself through this process.
You know, that's beautiful that you're saying all of these things, because what I'm hearing is oftentimes sometimes people like to compartmentalize things because it's easy for us to understand things in little snippets. On the flip side, there are also other folks that are saying, you know what, I'm a whole person and I need my feelings to be validated. I need my voice to be heard. I need for all of me to be part of this process. Because what I've also found is that when we just take little snippets and we take these little bits and pieces, then what ends up happening is other things that will emerge, right? So if I just take my thinking, for example, and I only focus on my thinking, then what becomes, you know, the shadow, you know, and can overpower are my feelings, or maybe it's my body sensations. So with your approach, you're saying, you know, we're taking the whole person. It's a holistic approach. And the other thing that I wanted to touch on is, you know, we're really talking about cellular memory and our nervous system working with our entire body, as well as our mind and our emotions and our energy. One of the things I'd like us to focus on real quickly too, is that sometimes visualization is a wonderful healing tool, but can the opposite be true? And why I want to talk a little, just to touch on this, is because what we do at PTSD and Beyond is we provide guests such as yourself that are subject matter experts to say, hey, you know what, here is one way of doing it. And it's worked in so many areas. Consider trying it, consider looking at it and actually applying it and using it. And at the same time, there are folks that might say, well, I've tried visualization before, but I didn't get the results that I thought I would get. So can we talk about how there's not a vanilla approach to trauma recovery, but what can visualization do? And maybe there's opposites that are truths for folks.
One thing that I think we need to point out is the kind of work that we're doing is very brief. A lot of the visualizations that I've been exposed to can go on for 15, 20, even 30 minutes. And I think the focus of that is to a large degree about relaxation and trying to kind of go into a deeper state.
Yeah.
Our visualizations are very quick, usually 30 seconds to a minute. And the idea is that it's kind of taking place in no time, where healing really does take place. And we do some breath work in order to relax. We do three quick breaths so that a person is kind of in a different place. And then these exercises are generally repeated three times a day, but only 30 seconds, let's say, three times a day. So it's very easy to do. It's very safe. It's been around for 2,000 or 3,000 years. And if a person doesn't feel good about what's happening, they just simply stop and often will go to another exercise. So there usually is an exercise that works beautifully for one person. Each of us find what is working well in our body.
I call that the chocolate chip cookie theory. Because seriously, I do. So when you get somebody who will say, you know, there's always somebody who's going to there's always some study that's going to invalidate another study, right? Mm-hmm. And there's always someone who's going to say, I remember one time I was presenting at the APA, American Psychological Association. And I mean, this person was like the perfect heckler, right? And I mentioned this and I said, well, what's your favorite chocolate chip cookie? And then I said, before you even say something, everybody that's here in this auditorium, ask yourself the question, right? Answer, what's your favorite chocolate chip cookie? What are the ingredients of that chocolate chip cookie, right? And then the next thing is, okay, but your chocolate chip cookie recipe is like the one, right? Everybody knows, even folks that are listening right now, I know that you know, right now you've got your key ingredients, whether it's walnuts and semi-sweet chocolate chips, or maybe it's white chocolate with macadamia, with a certain kind of butter, you know, or maybe someone's more artesian, they've got the hard flour. I mean, everybody's got their thing. What's beautiful about this book, and folks, I'm going to have all the contact information for Phyllis and Rachel, links to where you can get their book, links to where their workshops are at, is literally this book is packed with, and it's segmented too. Like if you want to look at anxiety and fear, if you want to look at overcoming addiction, physical pain, insomnia, and nightmares. So it's categorized for these snippets of visualizations. And so we have a treat for folks that are listening. We've got a few more, a few more questions to ask. And we're actually going, they're actually going to get into doing one of these exercises for you. So if you're listening, just bear with me for a second because the information is so important, you know, and we'll get into a visualization. And I love that you're saying that they're short because it's true. What happens with folks that do what's another type of practice of visualization is they're so long that people will say, I really just don't have time for that. Or on the flip side, especially with mindfulness, for example, there are some folks that will say, I can't close my eyes. But yet every practitioner that I've gone to immediately says, okay, let's take a few moments right now. Let's reconnect with our breath. Let's close our eyes. And for some people that really freaks them out because they're not there yet. So what I love about your book is you meet people with where they're at and they're able to determine where they're at from the references here.
If I can just mention something, this work came out of Phyllis's 4 years of working with veterans. And what she found and how we constructed this book is that, you know, they were all at different levels. Some of them were ready to confront, some of them weren't. And what she did and how we conceived of it was that these mental images are like peeling off layers of an onion. We're not going to go down to the most traumatic memory that a person has. Instead, what we're going to do is work on the periphery. And as we work on the periphery, things happen and change. Small changes bring about large changes. So for Phyllis, if she would work with somebody who came in, they didn't say, I wanted to get rid of all of my traumatic memories. They might say, I just want to be able to go to church and feel safe and not feel so hypervigilant. And that's where she was. She met them exactly where they were. And that is how the book is constructed. Now, you mentioned that people get traumatized by doing, they can get re-traumatized easily. And therefore, this book really was made for someone to use without being re-traumatized. At the end of the book, we have exercises that you can do with clinicians to actually get into the core of the trauma that you may need to reverse. But in the meantime, there are many, many other exercises that can prepare you and can make a significant change in the quality of your life and how you're experiencing living so that you can live more freely. You want to add something, Phyllis?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that another thing we realize is that it's not only the person who's traumatized who's suffering, but it's the whole family, the whole unit. So we have a section where we have exercises and things to do for those who are living with someone who is suffering from trauma. And that seems to be very helpful.
I think this book is so profound right now, especially in our world of COVID, because there are folks who are experiencing post-traumatic stress symptoms and they're saying, okay, I need some help. And then because we're in isolation right now with our families, you know, we have people, I mean, like in our family, you know, my family, can just take my family, for example, you know, living with post-traumatic stress and then doing this work, I'm very much aware of the pulse of my kids, like where are things at with them and what help do they need? Imagine the person who has post-traumatic stress, whether it's clinically diagnosed or not, and they're saying, you know what, now I've got the stuff that I have had since, say, childhood trauma, for example, or sexual assault recovery, and they're going through their own recovery process, and maybe not, and they're saying, I need some assistance right now, and this book is really key. Again, folks, I can't stress it enough. And the other thing is that we have people who do listen to our podcast as well as attend the chat that are clinicians and practitioners, whether they're medical doctors, MDs, DOs, nurse practitioners, physician's assistants, psychologists, psychiatrists, peer support advocates, mental health counselors that look at our information for resources to help them. So to the listener out there that is a practitioner, this book has a section in there that is specifically for you. So then you can use this as a tool, as well as if you have a client that is coming to you saying, hey, you know what, I've been able to use some of this stuff. And for folks that are listening, one of the upcoming PTSD and Beyond chats is going to be specifically about visualization and highlighting the work of Phyllis and Rachel. So you'll have more information about that too. Can we dive in right now and do an exercise? So folks that are listening, and the disclaimer is that you're not driving the car, guys, right? So if you're thinking about driving the car, either pull over or wait till you get home, so you're in a safe spot. I've got to have the disclaimer there, even though we have a disclaimer anyway. But now sometimes people are driving the car and they're saying, oh, I'm just going to listen to it anyway. But can we get into an exercise right now for folks?
Sure. And just before we do it, although usually they're written as close your eyes, you can do imagery with eyes opened or eyes closed.
Excellent. Excellent.
Go ahead, Rachel.
Okay. So this one is called the Blue Sky Umbrella. And everybody sit up in a chair, if you're in a chair, if you're able to, with your spine, you know, relaxed but erect, and you put your hands either in the arms of the armchair or at your lap. And closing your eyes, breathe out three times slowly. So you want to take a long, slow exhalation through your mouth and a normal inhalation through the nose. And another long, slow exhalation through the mouth, relaxing your jaw as you and your shoulders as you breathe out. An inhalation again through the nose, and another long, slow exhalation. Imagine you have an oversized umbrella. Open the umbrella and see that it covers you with a cloudless, bright blue sky that extends outward in all directions. This umbrella is covering and protecting you and your loved ones. Breathe out and open your eyes. So the way you would practice this is to do this three times a day, in the morning, in the evening, and before bed. And each time you do it, keep the intention of removing anxiety or feeling protected or lifting despair, because imageries have a lot of crossovers, and one imagery can be used for many different emotional states often.
We also want to add that most of the exercises are done for a period of 21 days. And the reason for that is it takes 21 days, 3 weeks to change a habit, to change a way of being. And so that's how we do it.
That's excellent. So
that also really addresses... Yeah, to me, that addresses why people give up often when they do imagery, is that they're expecting a miracle cure. And instead, what you need to do is make this a habit of mind. So you're retraining yourself to think, feel, and act in new ways. And what you discover in imagery, you want to bring out into the world. So these are rather scripted imageries, but the imageries that really, that we're really aiming for you to develop is your own internal imagery. So if, in addition to a blue sky umbrella, something else pops up in your imagery that's meaningful, Let's say you see a teddy bear along with a blue sky umbrella. Perfect. No problem. Add that in. We want you to add in what comes out of you spontaneously. And that's really what you are in training in yourself. And if you see an image in your, if you see an image like a teddy bear, go in and go out and buy one if you don't have one, because that acts as a reminder to your, the outside reminder reverberates inside.
Yeah. And we do have a chapter in the book about creating your own exercises, and that can be really a lot of fun and very useful as you go. That you, things come up for you, and you might have a dream, you might see something across the road, and then you create an exercise around that.
So folks, that when you're going through this exercise, if you happen to create your own, again, the contact information for Phyllis and Rachel will be in the summary of the podcast episode. So feel comfortable to send them a message and even comment even on the podcast about what did you create by yourself. And one of the things that is really powerful is when folks actually apply this information and they share it with their peers, both on the chat and the podcast. What's really nice is that people will comment and say, even like this happened last night, real time, which is amazing, is that, you know, somebody had listened to one of the podcast episodes and said, I don't know if you realize this, but listening to that gave me hope. And to get that kind of feedback is so validating for the work that we continue to do. So the individual that's, you know, the person that's listening to this right now, if you do the exercise and then you get the book and you create your own, or even if you do create your own imagery session technique, go ahead and, you know, send Phyllis and Rachel a message and let them know, how did it work for you?
And comment, we'd love to know.
Comment down below. I mean, that's the way that we get the validation of, you know what? See, this is the reason why we do what we do. There's one thing that you ladies talk about is about reshaping and correcting memories. Can you help us understand a little bit more about what does that exactly mean, reshaping and correcting memories? Is that, you know, reframing things, or how do we reshape stuff?
Well, very often something happens when we're, let's say, younger or more fragile. And as we move along in our life, we have a lot more capability. We have a lot more strength and understanding. So I can give you an example. I did my junior year abroad in Jerusalem. And during that period, there was a lot of violence, a lot of bombing. I got shot at a lot. And one day I was studying in the library and it blew up. It filled with smoke. I went outside. There were bodies everywhere. And for years, I had nightmares. I couldn't get to sleep. And when I met Dr. Epstein, who was my teacher in this work, he and I worked on visualization so that it took me about 3 months to be able to do this, but I was trying to get to the place where I could walk through that pathway where there were bodies and feel okay. And I actually took a trip back there after this process. And I went and I looked at the place where the bombing had taken place, where I had stood, and I felt fine. And after that, it was no more nightmares and very little trauma reaction.
Wow,
so
that's incredible.
What I did, I mean, what happened is that I took the person I was now, 20 years later, and realized I was no longer that 19-year-old girl, mm-hmm. and was able to move through it, reincorporate it, and change the way I understood what had happened. So that's one of the ways that we work.
That's incredible.
I'm going to give another example where a fellow came into my husband's practice. He writes about it in a different book that he wrote, and he describes that the man who is in his 40s. Was furious at his mother and hadn't spoken to her in 10 years. So what he did was he took this 40-year-old man, and imaginally went back to the moment which encapsulated the person's rage against his mother. Because there would be many instances of quote-unquote trauma with his mother or bad interactions. And this man came up with a memory he had of his mother. And he remembered that they were in a store together and he was acting up. He was a little kid and the mother was very, very distressed. And she takes him by the ear and pulls him out of the store. And this infuriated him. And when he goes back into this memory, he goes back and he corrects the memory. And instead of seeing his mother pull him by the ear, he sees her starting to pull him by the ear. And instead he grabs her little, his hand, and he puts his little hand in her big hand, and they walk out silently together. So he's now repaired this memory that's been reverberating in him, in his feeling life, in his thinking life, and in his cellular life. Mm-hmm. And he repairs it and he does this correction for 21 days. And at the end of that time, he called his mother and had the first conversation he could have with her in 10 years.
Wow.
So that's sort of how he went back and corrected not such a traumatic memory, but a memory that was definitely inhibiting him from moving forward in his relationships.
Wow, that's absolutely incredible. There are many people that are listening to this podcast right now that can resonate with that and relate to it, to say, you know what, I've got a memory. And the interesting thing is that when memories come up, we're not able to control when or where or why, it just does. One of the things that I find with this podcast is that there are continuous nuggets of hope throughout our conversation. We're talking about hope with, you know, reframing things, hope with that stuff is old, and there's an and piece here, and there's always hope and the possibility of change. And that's one of your quotes, which is, there is always hope and possibility of change. So before we end today's session together, what are three nuggets that you'd like the listeners to take away with?
I would say one thing is, in imagination, anything can happen.
In imagination, anything can happen.
Yes.
What are two other things you think?
I think for the other one that always is a central part of all healing and of this work particularly, is that you be your own authority and listen to your own inner wisdom.
And that's really key. Absolutely. And I'm sorry, go ahead, Phyllis.
Sorry. I would say a third thing would be, and this is really important to me, the past does not dictate the future.
The past does not dictate the future. So we're going to take those three nuggets and I'll make quote cards out of them. And so those will be available for folks too when we do the episode on the book with the chat. And I can't thank you both enough for being on today, for sharing your gifts, for giving your time, for sharing a visualization technique, for publishing your book, for talking about the work, and as well as preserving history of folks that are our loved ones that have inspired, as well as sharing your story. Guys, this is Dr. Deb with PTSD and Beyond with our wonderful guests, Phyllis Kahaney, and then also Rachel Epstein. Ladies, thank you again for being on today.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Guys, this is Dr. Deb again with PTSD and Beyond, and we'll see each other again next week. Have a good one, eh?